Radio.
When two parishes become one, opportunities for evangelization when parishes merge. A presentation by Father Paul Monkerud at the Proclaim 2016 conference, brought to you by Credio and XT3.
Thanks, Anita. Look, it's nice to be with you, and I have been part of a merger, so that's a relief. So, right at the start, I thought we might just pray. So let's just bow our heads for a sec and ask the Lord's blessing. This reading comes from St. Paul's letter to the Romans, chapter 10. For everyone who calls on the name of the Lord shall be saved. But how are they to call on one in whom they have not believed? And how are they to believe in one of whom they have never heard? And how are they to hear without someone to proclaim him? And how are they to proclaim him unless they are sent? As it is written, how beautiful are the feet of those who bring the good news. And so we ask that Spirit to be with us, because in this whole ambit of evangelisation, the question of merging parishes comes more and more front and centre. When I was appointed to the twinned parishes of Ryde and Gladesville, and they're very demographically similar, northern area of Sydney, Gladesville grew out of Ryde. Ryde, 1851, one of the oldest parishes in Sydney. Gladesville grew out of there in 1946. As a result of the incumbent parish priest of Ryde at that time, and with his money, he came from a very wealthy family, and he, God love him, was financed the church and part of the school, but it was because of population pressures and so on. And so since 1946, the two parishes have worked independently, and then as I will explain what happened to bring the future, rather the past, back to the present and into the future. I wasn't there long after being appointed in April 2010, and I went to a lovely 80th birthday party in one of the parishioners at there. That was my first home visit in Gladesville. And as you can imagine, this scenario, I'm the parish priest of the big parish, twice as big as Gladesville, since 1998, and I'm appointed in 2010 to be the parish priest of both parishes, which the smaller of which has had an administrator for 3 years, but has been without a priest for a while and getting supplies and stuff. How did it look from the committed people there? Looked like I could be a corporate raider. Because the other thing that was true was Ryde, because of circumstances, a couple of bricks falling down or slate tiles, had spent all its money. Gladesville had heaps in the bank. So therefore, it looked even worse that I might be coming in, you know, strip the assets and then close it up. And so we had to do all of that stuff. But I went to this party, and it was about 40 people there, and mostly in the senior group, a lot of committed parishioners of Gladesville. And it was lovely. Everyone was beautiful. And then this lovely Irish lady sidled up to me and said, Father, you're most welcome to our parish. We have a lovely parish here, she said, pointing to all the guests in the house. We get on really well together. We've known each other for so long, and we go. When anyone's sick, it's really good. We really, really have a lovely parish. You're not going to change that, are you, Father? In that rhetorical question was a whole heap of stuff, but very, very prophetic for me, because in that beautiful way of that lady, she was saying, we're into keeping things as it is, so obviously not missionary. And in doing that, she was speaking in beautiful way the place of many people that I came across since. So I took that with me as I ventured into the whole opportunity. So first of all, I just want to look at quickly, there's a lot of stuff here, so we'll manage it as we go. what do we mean by the new evangelization? If merger is going to be something that might assist but also challenge the new evangelization and so on, we need to just have a sense, or you need to hear what I think the new evangelization is all about. So first of all, new evangelization is evangelization. It's always been the same. The proclamation of and witness to the word of God in the person of Jesus through the activity of the Spirit to the world. So this whole Trinitarian dimension is very much front and centre. So new evangelization is evangelization. But what's new about it is it's focused on baptized non-participants. Why? Because it comes from the new evangelization topic, comes from Redemptoris Missio, a document by St. John Paul II in 1990. In Article 33, there is the Pope speaking about how can we take the message of God in evangelization to the world in new. And he recognises three circumstances for that challenge. He sees the traditional missionary target, which are those people that have never heard about Jesus or most well not of in terms of where they're at in relation to faith. There are those people who are committed in their communities and need pastoral care. They're very important. They kind of, if you like, keep the engine room going and so on. And then there's, the Pope said, this group, growing group of baptised people who are not participating at all kinds of degrees. They're not participating. And they're the targets of the new evangelisation or the re-evangelisation. So if we're going to talk about a new evangelisation, we're going to talk about parishes being about that, and Merge is going to support that, then we need to keep in mind the focus on these people who are not there but could be, rather than those people that are. And a lot of stuff, it seems to me, in terms of our pastoral planning and our thinking, even now, is still targeted around old models. We all come, and especially us priests, come back to those people that are there, and they're very important. But for the new evangelization, if we're going to use that term, then we've got to talk about the people that aren't there, but with a different focus and different thrust could be. And we do this by enabling active participants. So not only have we got to reach out beyond where we are at the moment, we've got to reconstitute, enable our committed people to be reconstituted so they're on to be missionary disciples. It's a process of conversion. And that means a change to outreach and relating in faith rather than still seeing faith as something that I do privately, inwardly, and with detachment. It means that we need to enable them into a personal encounter with Christ. That work, Forming Intentional Disciples by Shelley Waddell, I don't know whether you're aware of that. It's a wonderful kind of stimulus. And she's an RCIA graduate and became really knocked over by when she started to talk to even priests and so on about evangelization, that very few, surprisingly few, could speak about a personal encounter with Christ. So that personal encounter with Christ is what the new evangelization is grounded in. We're talking about parishes that are growing, not being maintained. And that's a challenge in our demographic for sure. It's a responsibility of all the baptised. As we know, that's very much Vatican II talk now. It's been in for 50 or 60 years. This is about everyone doing this, and it's going to require faith formation at various levels. And therefore, in a new parish, if the parish is going to be evangelising and new evangelising, we've got to build a faith formation network that's really the central nervous system of the whole operation and therefore impinges on everything that we think and do. And this is because the new evangelization and the complete turnaround in terms of faith and so on, because of changing affiliations. People, for Catholics, more and more Catholics, as you know, the church is just one option amongst many on a Sunday and during the week. And there are so many more options than there used to be in the past. So we're a player in the marketplace with so many other very attractive and perhaps immediately more attractive options. Just quickly, this is an archery board. right? And I see it, and this is the parish, and I see trying to get a sense of what are the dynamics in what we're trying to create. Here's your core people that do everything and are everything. Then there's a next group who go to church every Sunday and they're involved, but they leave these people to do most of the work. Then there's the next group that go probably once a month. Then it goes out. Now, there are people out here to go Christmas and Easter, or maybe only when their grandchild is baptised or their relative dies. But they're all part of the parish. And it seems to be we've got to enable two dynamics working together. We've got to, in some way, because here are your new evangelization targets, your third and fourth rings, for example, typically in the local public school, local Catholic school, the primary school or the high school. We've got to, first of all, empower these, or help the Spirit empower these people so they reach out rather than reach in, especially to those who I say are the legitimate targets of the new evangelization. And then we've got to also make sure that our programs and our structures are not focused here but focused out there, trying to draw these people back further into the centre so that they can be reconverted to go out and to do their thing, especially in their own marketplaces. So there's a kind of a centripetal and a centrifugal dynamic that we're trying to set up simultaneously. All right, so to the merger, and I was asked to give just some kind of walk through what we did in terms of merger. Now, this is very detailed and I'm not going to dwell on any of these, but they're put in because in some ways they are either intended or non-intended but grace-filled moments in the whole unfolding of the twinning to merger enterprise. Okay, so I've been appointed at Ryde in Gladesville as the parish priest of twinned parishes. One parish priest, two parishes, where there used to be two parish priests for two parishes. And I'm appointed for 6 years. About 8 months later, we appoint a St. Charles member, so that's Ryde member, for the sacramental program in Gladesville. That was an important one because all of a sudden we're starting to seed this bed of relationships. Then January of 2012, we had a parish secretary in Gladesville, a parish secretary in Ryde. What we did is reorientated so that the parish secretary of Ryde became the parish secretary of Ryde Gladesville, and the parish secretary of Gladesville became the business manager of the whole operation. And that was according to gifts as well, but again, trying to get that thing happening. Remember, it's still twinned. There's no talk about merger yet. It's in my mind for sure, and it's in my mind because twinning is a cop-out. Twinning is a decision made in order to deal with the reducing number of, not priests, but priests who are competent and willing to be parish priests in the new and increasingly complex apostolate that we have. So my problem with twinning was always that it was just seemed to be not double of anything, but a lot more than it needed. And that was because, in many ways, the church has decided, at least in our neck of the world, to remain with a particular model of parish leadership, which is contained to celibate men who are ordained priests. That means then that your pool is small, so you have to find a way to that. And I think twinning is one way of doing that. But the problem is that the parishes just continue to work as parishes, and the priest has to work harder and harder in that scene. And I think we have to say it. I think if that's true, we have to say it, that the twinning is really an option that is at the detriment of priests, in my view.
Parish I mentioned before is, well, operationally in terms of one thing is seeing one finance committee and everything that's happened, but the byline of it is one parish with two distinct communities, which I think automatically embeds a kind of separation forever and a day.
Well, have you got 20? Well, technically, you should have two finance committees if you're going by canon law. You should have two finance committees. Now, the fact is that lots don't, but they're having a kind of a twinning merger 0.6 sort of thing. But whatever you've got twinning and people who are really committed at the engine room, beautiful people who are, whose heart and soul and history are all tied up with their parish, twinning doesn't do anything to encourage them really existentially to move beyond what was there before. They tolerate what's going on and all of that, and they work with it as beautiful people do, but they're not really called to conversion to a new reality. So we went then to September, and we had one in 2012. So this is how are we going now? We're 2.5 years on from the merger. And what we did then was we closed the office at Gladesville, and we merged the two offices into one. We're still twinned, remember? And remember, we've still got the staff now getting to know each other and so on. Then one of the great things was we combined the Christmas vigil with all the kids and all of that stuff. They used to be in two churches. We took them to one of the high schools, which was equidistant between the two churches, and we had a combined celebration. And this was great because it started to bring in the parents of the primary schools to be doing things together. And it was interesting. It was tense in the first one. It was tense. Well, if you do this, we've got to do that. If my child does this, your child's got to do that. That's all part of the process. We were doing lots of building because this is happening concurrently with the building education revolution. This is the big influx by Kevin Rudd's government. And so I'm moving around different places as the presbytery gets knocked down and all of our stuff. But anyway, that's not that important. What is significant, though, is that, and this was an explicit move, I moved into the presbytery, which had become vacant and was only which had been vacant, and was the office for Gladesville. But when the secretary moved up here, I decided to move down there. Now, it was only going to be until the building at Ryde was completed. We were building a new presbytery there, but it was a symbolic move for the people of Gladesville, remembering that they looked as if they're going to lose out most in this whole twinning thing. And especially if it goes to merger. Then, by this time, I had decided that we really need to push this merger question to as far as we can go, and please God, get it through. So I invited leaders from both parishes to form this Interim Parish Advisory Board, IPAD. It's just what we call it. And that they were equal numbers from each of the parishes, even though one parish is twice as big as the other, because it was really important that Gladesville, the smaller parish, see them being well represented. This sacramental coordinator in March became the sacramental coordinator of the whole of the two parishes, and I presented the rationale to the leadership group. We then moved into a combined liturgy committee of the two parishes. Then I move into the house at Ryde, but having made the gesture at Gladesville, it's much easier for those people to cope with the fact that from now on in, the two priests who serve both parishes will live in one, the bigger of the two. I write to Cardinal Pell, the Archbishop at the time, to seek support to moving towards merger. He writes back and tells me he will support that. And he had moved on that because the Cardinal was not originally as keen about this, and that's because obviously merging and twinning and so always looks diminishing. Can't we fight this? Can't we get more priests, etc., etc.? But it was wonderful. We had a terrific dialogue, as I had with the Cardinal right through this, and he wrote back after a meeting and said, you can do this providing you get 75% of parishioners in both churches or both parishes agreeing to the proposal, 75%, not 75% overall in both churches, and you respect the patrony, which of course is canon law anyway, Canon 121. Okay. So in February of 2014, so this is now almost 4 years on from my appointment of the twinning arrangement, we vote to proceed to the merger. So it's not if now, but when. And one of the things was we had to get to that point in the leadership where I had to ask all the people on that, are you committed to this? If you're not, you'll have to step off. And thanks be to God, they all were by this time. They saw, the Gladesville people also saw that despite the sadness of seeing their parish soon to be no longer in a merged arrangement, this was their future because they saw in the bigger entity a whole lot of opportunities that weren't going to be there if they remained smaller. Okay, so we then had parishioners from Gladesville join the Ryde Parish Pastoral Council, another very important thing, and the nurturing that happened there was lovely. We're getting close to the vote now, and so in June, the leadership group make sure that all the roles and responsibilities for driving this process in its climax are clear. And then comes the month where we combine the bulletins. Before this, we had two bulletins. Now we combine the bulletins. Still a section for Gladesville, still a section for Ryde, but it's a step. And then we're all but ready to go for the voting and in July. Okay. Comes August, the crunch time. The whole of August was going to be, it was dedicated to the communication that we're going to vote for this proposal that the two parishes merge. And we're going to do that in the fourth week of this process. Now, when the marketers, there were two marketers on the leadership group, said, we're only going to have a month of this, I said, oh, that's very short, telling people about this. But they were right because their idea was that people can only cope with even the most important of stuff for so long. And so their idea was we put all the intensity into this 4 weeks. We make sure that every tick and cross is done so that people have a chance to ask their questions, state their fears and so on and so forth. And then we come to vote and we do that within a month. Of course, also, it was going to create a whole lot of work for these people who are busy, and so they weren't really that interested in going for longer than was necessary. Okay, so we start explaining the process in the bulletins, the website, all of that. We have four parish assemblies, and we come then to the vote. And we did the vote in all six masses on the 23rd and 24th of August. And the results published the next week. And we did very well. 98% at Ryde, 92% at Gladesville. What we did at the assemblies was a couple of things. We explained what we were going to do, why we were going to do it, why merger was important, how they could participate in the process, and we also took questions and created a question and answer dynamic document, which we updated each of the assemblies and published in the bulletins on the website. So any people who weren't at the assemblies or were even those people on the outside of the target board but were still interested could access what was going on. No, we didn't. We gave them enough specifics for them to be clear enough as to what we wanted and why we wanted it.
So mass times?
Yes, we talked about the fact that mass times wouldn't change.
Oh, wouldn't.
No, didn't have to, because there was no reason to do that because all the masses were going well, and I had help and all the rest of it. So that's right.
Very different.
Exactly. That's what I'm saying. That this there are all kinds of different mergers from here to here. This is one where we're really very positively kind of placed because we've had the time.
We didn't have to reduce.
We could have. I could have, but I chose not to. And even more than that, we could have. I was told, oh no, you've got to change the name of the new entity from what it was before. We didn't do that either. So we still, I said we in a moment, they are the parish of St. Charles Borromeo and Our Lady Queen of Peace, Ryde Laysville. However, as you will see, and the cardinal, sorry, the archbishop said, oh no, you've got to change. I said, well, look, Archbishop, if we make too many issues in this, we're going to get the Australian response to any kind of referendum. They're going to say, no, nah, we'll keep the same. And I told the people, and I was very clear to tell the people, that I want this mandate and I want it in unequivocal terms, because if you want me to continue as the parish priest here, then this is what I believe is best for this community. So I put my reputation on the line. Aha. Okay. Let's just. And the reason was that the reason then is in terms of sacramental programs, which are already being standardised, people then can go to either one. We haven't got to the school thing yet, where up till now the parochial issue of enrolments has been strong, but it wasn't. So I'm getting away probably, because I would have liked to have stayed for probably another 6 years to bed this down, because the issues that are going to come up are very much say, well, look, if I'm living in the greater parish now, my child can go to either school, and that's starting to happen, and we have to manage all of that. It also raises questions about, do the schools continue as are, or do they have a different format? All of those questions are the post-merger issues. They can't all be resolved before the merger, because we've got, if you, in terms of just the politic of it all, we've got a very complex and very deep issue here for a minority of the parishioners. Most people, as long as the services are basically round about what they need, they don't care. And if they're not, well, I guess some where they are, or stop going, or whatever, some of them. But for people for whom the parishes are their lifeblood and they've been in the generations and so on, this is massive stuff, you know. This is about their identity. This is about who they are, where they've come from and where they're going. So we wanted to, because we could, make this decision as unequivocal and simple and clear as possible and get their commitment, which we did, and then start to work on the ramifications of the thing from there on in. Okay, we've just got 10 minutes to go, so I just wanted to, I'm not beholden to any of these things, but just wanted to go through the quick, so we've already talked about a lot of these things. Look, merger is the logical culmination of twinning. If you've made a decision about these parishes, then why keep them apart? Why not really try and accompany them to the ramification of that identification? I think that merger does allow a rationalisation and streamlining of processes and procedures and resources, one finance committee, one parish council, all of that sort of stuff. It does give also flexibility in terms of finances and financial allocations, resource allocations, all of that. It enables a unity of vision, attitude and action. So the people who are really committed to Gladesville in the engine room, for whom, when twinning says, well, that's fine, right, do whatever, but they're very nice people, we're going to do it this way, all of a sudden now have to look out beyond their rather narrower kind of context, and that's good. It's hard, but it's also good. It actually draws growth. It provides economies of scale for new evangelisation. For example, with youth. No youth trying to do stuff with youth ministry and young adult ministry if you haven't got a critical mass, because they look like kind of Nigel No Friends. So that you really need a kind of group. So this, I think, properly managed, provides an opportunity to do things that smaller parishes can't. Now, of course, against this, you're not going to have the intimacy of the smaller parish. But I think this idea that the pastor of a small parish knows all these people, intimate and all that stuff, I mean, I think that's living back to a golden age. You go to visit, even in a small parish, you go to visit people, they're away, they're minding the grandkids, there's a vicious dog, whatever, times have just changed. It gives the parish a higher profile in the local church and community. So Rye Gladesville Parish now had a much bigger footprint in terms of the local council and its constituents, and if the parish priest is politically savvy in the right possible way, these are real advantages for the church. And, of course, also the parish priest of Rye Gladesville has a strong sense in terms of the local church if he realises that for his own people. And I think it optimises the influence of gifted clergy leaders. Ordination doesn't make you automatically a priest who is capable and even willing to be a parish priest. And being a parish priest is much more complex than it was even a short time ago, and it's getting more complex exponentially. It is, and I'm not sure sometimes that all our leaders, again, have caught up with that. That in terms of governance, in terms of the complex relationships, in terms of the fact that we've got to now market our
product,
our church, in a way we didn't have to before, all of those things are high-order skills, and or to even mobilise people who can do that, that's another high-order skill. And so it seems to me that we've got only so many priests who are capable of this role. And I'm not putting down, there are people with wonderful gifts, but they're not the gifts of running a parish. So it seems to me that this gives us an opportunity to mobilise or allocate or deploy our gifted people in a way that's quite interesting. All right. My key learnings from the whole process: we need a long preparation but a short delivery where the rubber hits the road. So that 1 month of going from communicating it intensely to actually managing the vote, 1 month was after a 2-year working on that 1 month and after a number of years of dripping it in the water through the twinning reality. And that was a revelation to me, because I thought this was going to be too short and people were going to get uptight, but they didn't. There was certainly some energy and some argy-bargy in the assemblies, but not as much as I thought, and people in the end went for it. You need a representative leadership team. You need a team who are really, the members of which are respected, public and well-known, and who take on the reality, because they're going to have to carry it for the rest, especially in the across the fence and at the pub and at the hairdresser and all of that stuff, in terms of when this is being talked about, those people that care. It needs to be a simple, clear communication voting process. The less issues that people have got to think about, the better. And we trust people and their capacity to deal with all of these things, but we need to also nurture them to realise that they don't have to deal with all the issues at the one time. The prior initiatives, those things that I went through, those little things on the timeline, all did their little bit, those little graces. At the end of the day, one of the most, if not the most important, or most, the biggest stumbling block, especially if there's differences in the financial and asset resourcing, will be your finances. So that needs to be thought of really seriously, because people, that's where kind of you can quantify a whole lot of things for people. So I thought we did that well. Need to keep the authorities informed, in other words, the chancery and so on, so that when it comes time for them to sign off and all of that, they're really in the loop. Not just because of that, but because that's important. And remember that the process and the vote, so for us, where I was on the 24th of May 2015, we came to the end of a beginning, but we were just starting off on the beginning of something new. Very exciting. Thank you, everyone. We're at time. Thank you.
Thank you.
I hope that helps.
That was Father Paul Monkerud with When Two Parishes Become One: Opportunities for Evangelization When Parishes Merge. This presentation was part of the Proclaim 2016 conference on the theme, On a Mission of Mercy, Evangelizing Parishes. which was hosted by Broken Bay Diocese Australia. And for more talks, interviews and shows, visit cradio.org.au.